The Academy Awards are given out tonight, even though it's still February. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences moved up this year's ceremonies ahead 1 month, so we've moved our annual Oscar Music Series to keep up. Joining us for his 9th season on NPR's Weekend Edition is our number one film music fan, Andy Trudeau. Hi, Andy.
Hey, Leanne.
Alphabetically by picture, this year's nominees for Best Original Score are Big Fish by Danny Elfman, Cold Mountain by Gabriel Yared, Finding Nemo by Thomas Newman, House of Sand and Fog by James Horner, and Lord of the Rings, Return of the King by Howard Shore. Now, last week, we listened to selections from the Elfman, Yared, and Horner scores, which leaves two. And last week you said one appeals to a short attention span, the other to a long. So who's on first?
Short attention span first. Before this year, if you said, we're going to talk about the score for one of these Pixar animated full-length films with music by Newman, you meant Randy Newman. That's right. He scored Toy Story 1, 2, and Monsters, Inc., which he won for Best Song last year. This year, it's his cousin, Thomas. This is a really interesting choice. Newman has never scored anything like this before. And when you think about the kinds of films he does, they're dark. Road to Perdition, we talked about. American Beauty. This is the kind of style he's bringing to this story, and it's interesting, it's what the director wanted. According to the director, Andrew Stanton, when he wrote the screenplay for Finding Nemo, he listened in the background to Thomas Newman's scores. This is the director. He said, "In Tom's world, beauty and sadness are never too far away from each other."
So this is 6 feet under the sea, right?
This is cartoon music. It's going to require a lot of quick changes. Composers have to pour lots of notes into these scores. Usually there's a tune, but Tom Newman's not really a tune writer like his cousin Randy is. But he can deliver some really different moods. And I wanted to start with, he's a great string writer. I don't think that gets enough credit. And listen to this string passage from Finding Nemo.
Nice and lush.
Oh, and the way he balances the choirs. We heard some of this in Road to Perdition. It's a very Americana sound, and there's nothing Americana about Finding Nemo, but he works that into the style. Another characteristic we've talked about in the previous scores, he has this wonderful ability to concoct a sound. He mistunes instruments and blends them together. I called it cooking with sour milk.
I remember that.
Well, in the other scores we listened to, Road to Perdition and American Beauty, it was much more prominent. It's still here, but you got to dig for it, and here's a section that does that. Typical cartoon music's all over the place. He's going to start sneaking it in. And here comes the sour milk. But hear how he's blending it? Abrupt quick ends are another element of cartoon music. Another thing you're going to find in cartoon scores is a lot of different musical styles. Just as the characters can instantly mimic something from the 30s or something from rock, the music has to follow along. And it's just fascinating to hear that these composers have to adjust those styles. Here's something to start with, which is a soft jazz. And listen to the electronics. To me, there's a little feline ending to this. I mean, he's evoking a sort of jazzy feeling.
Mm-hmm. Old Looney Tunes music.
Yeah. But listen, right at the end to the electronic and see if that's not a little meow. For a fish story, you sort of begin to wonder. Here's another one. Now, this is a prime example of how they have to butt together, if you will, very different styles. To my ears, this starts sounding a little like a Western. And it's going to get you into hard metal cartoon style. Here we are, riding over the
Big Valley.
That's right. And with no transition whatsoever, we're going to blend right into Rock on Tom. This is a cartoon score. Just butt them together.
Oh, bang your head slowly. We've been listening to music by Thomas Newman for Finding Nemo, one of five soundtracks nominated for this year's Oscar in the category of Best Original Score. So, one to go.
And it's a big one. Mm. This is Howard Shore's Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. This is episode 3. Last year was not eligible because there's a rule that a score that's based on previous year's material is ineligible. And since the second film used themes from the first film score, they rendered it ineligible. And I guess once you drop a year, it becomes eligible again, so the third one can be considered. But I don't think the rules ever anticipated a score like this one. This is really a type of approach that is far more classical than is usually in film. We've had successful sequel film scores before. In my own book, the score John Williams wrote for the second Jaws movie is almost as good as the first. And my great big hero, Jerry Goldsmith, wrote 3 scores for that Omen series, and they do utilize some themes from one to the next. But none of them were of the kind of organic treatment that Shore put these themes through in these various scores. It's interesting that both director Peter Jackson and Howard Shore do not think of these as 3 scores, but as 3 parts to one big score. And that gives you a bit of sense. I was reading one article where Shore was saying in the first film when they were making, he would say, write a little theme for this thing. You won't need it now, but you'll need it 6 hours later. And this is the kind of evolution that we find in this score. It's filled with themes, and they're so woven so tightly that I don't even want to get into the game of trying to start pulling them out. But I think it would be interesting to listen to a very dominant theme from the first film and hear how it's evolved in the last. So let's start with that very distinctive Hobbits theme from the first Lord of the Rings film, Fellowship of the Ring. Now, I don't want to put too much into it, but it's optimistic. There's a naivete here. So now let's move ahead to Lord of the Rings 3, Return of the King, and hear how that same theme sounds now. A little water under the bridge, would you just say?
I was going to say, yeah, it sounds older.
Worn down.
Yeah.
Both in terms of how he said it, the tempo, everything. One thing Shore is doing here is extending the themes and using them, breaking them up and using them in pieces. Now that you've got the Hobbit theme in your ear, listen to this sequence, and I think you're going to see both how he uses the fragments and, in a way, is letting your mind fill in the rest of it, and at the same time, he's adding to it. This is that Hobbit theme again from Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. Fragments of it. But it's going different places. See, when the music's on an emotional level, the composer, once he's established that relationship between a character, an idea, and a theme, he then can manipulate you, which he's doing here. He's taking it up.
In different instrumentation as
yes.
well.
It's validating everything you're feeling and seeing on the screen. Here's another key theme. This comes from the first Lord of the Rings score. I've always considered it the swashbuckling theme. Now, once again, when we fast forward to our current film, Lord of the Rings 3, Return of the King, it's there, but it's subdued, it's wearied, it's been through a heck of a lot. And he's wound it up with a lot of other music. It's tucked in there. It's all been compressed into this last score in a lot of ways. Shore is using the full resources. Not a lot of composers get to use big symphony orchestras and a full chorus. Here's an interesting cue where I like it. He uses the chorus almost in electronic fashion. We've heard in the scores we heard last time, they were all using choral sounds, but electronically. Here he's using real sounds, but to create a mysterious effect. I like this selection because it starts with a touch of Mahler to it. Here's our Mahler. Little trill in the horns. Building. Here I was using the chorus. Listen to the strings, how dissonant they are. He's creating such a sonic tension here.
You have to listen for the strings, though. They're right up there.
Yes. But it's all putting you on edge.
Yeah.
So much of this score is crafted out of one piece that I wanted to try to hear a whole selection. It's interesting, he doesn't like to use the word cue, which is a standard word, generally meaning a short little segment that they use. Here's a segment. It starts with a wonderful scrap between strings, fiddle, and horns over a theme. You're going to hear them fighting for it. Then we'll go to a brief pastoral moment marked by the flutes and the pipes, and then a great, grand, but subdued statement in the brass of a theme associated with one of the peoples in the story. Hear them fighting over that scrap of a theme? This is film scoring. In an orchestra and a concert hall, you could never get the fiddle to come out the way you're hearing it in this. But in a recording studio, no problemo. Feel the struggle in the music. Now he'll give us a bridging section. Taking us to the pastoral section. It evokes the Hobbit theme, but isn't the Hobbit theme. And he's underlaying this bass foundation with the orchestra. And now he's going to slowly build the texture. Now we're leading to that brass statement. New theme coming in.
We've been listening to the Academy Award-nominated score by Howard Shore from Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. Earlier, we heard music by Thomas Newman for Finding Nemo. The award ceremony is this evening, and it's time to recap the other three nominees and then get your favorite, Andy. So let's begin with Cold Mountain by Gabriel Yared.
This is a score that's driven by the emotional passion that ties the story together. It's a period film, but it's not a period score. Ironically, it's a romantic, lyrical, and sad score from a composer who doesn't want to be typecast as romantic, lyrical, and sad.
And next on the list is the well-established partnership between director Tim Burton and composer Danny Elfman for Big Fish.
This is a different kind of film for Elfman. It's a cartoon-like score and its quick changes in style, but it's also a tender film, and it demonstrates he's really more than a writer for costume adventurers.
And the final Oscar movie score in our recap is a Vadim Perlman film, House of Sand and Fog, music by James Horner.
In many ways, this is not your typical Horner score. He's consciously limited his palette to strings, electronics, and just a touch of percussion. It's a score that looks really inside the characters. This is very deep running water here.
Okay, we've got Danny Elfman, James Horner, Thomas Newman, Howard Shore, Gabriel Yared. Open your envelope and award the Andy Trudeau Golden Statuette, please.
The way I approach a score, I think, favors those that write with a kind of intelligence and craft that will continue to reveal their secrets to you over the years. These are scores I hope you'll want to come back to. There's only one score in this bunch that I believe will be long remembered and will really be considered an important part of film music history. It's such an incredible achievement that there's just no way I cannot say that the best score this year is Howard Shore's Lord of the Rings, Return of the King.
The Precious. Andy Trudeau is a manager for NPR programming. The Oscars are presented tonight. Next year, Andy, it'll be our 10th anniversary. And I look forward to talking to you next year. Maybe we'll have John Williams to kick around.
That'd be fun.
For more information on the nominations for the Academy Award for Best Original Score and to hear some of the music, go to our website, npr.org. This is NPR's Weekend Edition. I'm Leanne Hansen.